Good morning. This is Jane DeGrenier reading Plymouth Independent. It is Thursday, September 2nd. Independent hires new staff writer. Emily Spatz, 22, will cover education and general assignments for the growing online publication covering Plymouth. The Plymouth Independent welcomes its newest staff member, Emily Spatz, who will be enhancing its coverage of education and other relevant issues around town. A recent graduate of Northeastern University, Spatz earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in Journalism and Political Science. While attending Northeastern, she was named Editor-in-Chief of the Huntington News, where she led 100 writers, photographers, designers, and editors, directing coverage of Northeastern and Boston across print, digital, visual, and social platforms. As its top editor, she led a public campaign urging the school's president to speak with the Huntington News after 3 years of declining interview requests, an effort which drew attention from the Boston City Council and prompted a public hearing on university transparency. More recently, she was a summer intern at the Boston Globe in its Metro department. I'm excited to start at the Independent and learn from its extremely talented reporters and editors, Spatz said. I'm thankful for the opportunity to start my career here and serve the people of Plymouth. Born in Russia, Spatz grew up in suburban Nashville, where her parents owned and operated an herb farm. She enjoys bike riding, reading, walking, and exploring nature. Emily emerged from dozens of very qualified applicants as someone all of us at The Independent are excited to see thrive here in Plymouth, said editor David Kidwell. Her energy and enthusiasm are contagious, and I am confident she has much to teach all of pre-technology journalists. Her hiring was made possible by a generous donation from Independent board member Walter Robinson and his wife Barbara. Robinson is a former Boston Globe Spotlight editor, well known for leading a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation of sexual abuse perpetrated by Catholic priests throughout the Archdiocese of Boston. Select Board backs delay of Pilgrim Hall grant funds. A systemic oversight failure at Town Hall could stall grant money for months as recipients rush to complete new deed restrictions, by Fred Thies. Town officials told their bosses on the select board Tuesday the town was doled out nearly $40 million in taxpayer-funded project grants over the last 23 years without the proper oversight and preservation restrictions. Although they took no vote, the board members who spoke supported town manager Derek Bridensee's controversial position to withhold future grant payments until proper restrictions are in place. The disputed grants were given on the condition the recipient would record deed restrictions to ensure the projects funded are preserved in perpetuity, and in the case of historic preservation, the building's integrity is preserved. Without the restrictions, the money that was appropriated could be lost because there is no protection, Brindisi told the board at what was described as an informational update for its members. Brindisi has come under fire from the Pilgrim Society and some town meeting members since he announced last month he is withholding the final payment of a $3.6 million grant for a new roof and other improvements at Pilgrim Hall Museum. Town officials are demanding the Pilgrim Society, which owns the building, file the required deed restriction to preserve the building in perpetuity, a bureaucratic process that can sometimes take more than a year to complete. The museum is caught up in what Brindisi described as a systemic oversight failure at Town Hall, involving all community preservation grants dating to 2003. He provided board members the complete list, including 43 grants totaling more than $38.9 million. Most of the projects listed have already been finished. Town officials said they are working to complete the work of recording the restrictions. Donna Curtin, the museum's executive director, pushed back at the meeting, which sometimes became heated. She said the select board was misled by town officials regarding the necessity of the deed restrictions because the museum had already recorded three other deed restrictions dating back to 1996. Curtin, a town meeting member, said the Massachusetts Historical Society makes it clear to historic preservation organizations that once a preservation restriction is placed on a property in perpetuity, none other is required. Others in the audience agreed. If a restriction is recorded once and the property is subsequently in receipt of subsequent monies, there does not have to be a subsequent restriction recorded with every subsequent infusion of money, attorney Richard Cirkey, a town meeting member, told the select board. The money should be dispersed. Select board member Kevin Canty shot back that a new historic restriction is required when changes are made to the building. Canty said because town meeting called for a restriction, a new one should have been recorded. He said the grant agreement between the town and the Pilgrim Society also required a new restriction, but a review of the grant agreement by the Independent revealed that it allows the select board to accept a previously recorded agreement. When the Independent pointed this out to Canty in an email, he stuck by his position. Town Council has reviewed the town meeting vote, the entire grant agreement, and the opinion of Bond Council, and determined that a new historic preservation restriction is required, he said. It also makes no sense that a 1996 historic preservation restriction, which protected the roof as it was designed at that time, would be able to protect a new roof with a new design that involves substantial changes from what was there in 1996. The new work requires a new restriction. In all, Town Council Kate McKay said staff found similar problems with 43 grants for 27 projects, including those involving historic preservation, open space improvements, affordable housing, and recreation facilities. The state's Community Preservation Act allows towns to grant funds raised through a property tax surcharge for open space, recreation, affordable housing, and historic preservation. Town staff is working to place preservation restrictions on the projects. One historic preservation project that raised concerns is the Mayflower Meeting House. Because the Mayflower Society is planning to work to make the building more accessible, some worry historic preservation work already paid for will be undone. Community Preservation Committee Coordinator Kristen Ford told the select board she first realized the problem existed in August of 2025, when the Mayflower Society was planning to work to build a museum in the basement and change the facade of the building to make it more wheelchair accessible. She said the Mayflower Society immediately started working on the required deed restriction, but it took close to a year to hear back from the Massachusetts Historical Commission, which must approve such limitations. Lee Filson, president of the Mayflower Society, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Ford said she sent out a similar notice last year to the Pilgrim Society with the second-to-last payment for a $3.6 million grant to repair the roof and conduct other significant restoration work. She said she reminded the Society it had to file an additional historic preservation restriction before it could receive final payment. A draft has been sent back and forth between the town and the Pilgrim Society and is now before the Massachusetts Historic Commission for approval, she said. Whether the Society needed to file another restriction on the building when it had already recorded three, the first one as far back as 1996, is in dispute. Curtin, the museum director, reiterated to the board members her assertion to the Independent last week that no additional deed restrictions are required. She also said delaying the final payment on a project already complete will disrupt operations at the museum and delay other badly needed projects. Select board member Bill Keehan urged the board to pay Pilgrim Hall the nearly $370,000 for which it has been yet to be reimbursed. That's irresponsible to what was voted on at town meeting, Canty objected. The new policy of the Community Preservation Committee adopted in July is not to recommend grants to town meeting unless the town or a nonprofit has recorded a preservation restriction. Jennifer Harris, a town meeting member and vice chair of the Pilgrim Society and Pilgrim Hall Museum, pointed out that the Massachusetts Historical Society understands emergency situations, such as a leaking roof, require fast grant making. Requiring a 1 year to 2 year process before you are even allowed to receive the funding concerns me, Harris said. court watcher charged with jury intimidation. A Sutton woman was caught videoing jurors leaving the Plymouth courthouse in the high-profile murder trial of Lindsay Clancy. Her attorney told the judge it was a misunderstanding. By Andrea Estes. A 56-year-old Sutton mother of three was arrested outside of Plymouth Superior Court on Tuesday after she allegedly was caught taking video of jurors emerging from the Lindsay Clancy murder trial. Her case, one her attorney called an unintentional misunderstanding, has gone viral because of the media swarm outside waiting for a verdict in the high-profile trial. The retired nurse was swarmed by reporters as she left her arraignment on Wednesday. Dawn Light was spotted by a court officer in a restricted area of the parking lot on Obrey Street. Her car was backed into the remotest parking space, State Trooper Abigail Robinson wrote in her report. Light denied recording any jurors and said she was just hoping to catch a glimpse of Clancy on trial in the deaths of her three children leaving the courthouse. She agreed to show the trooper her phone. There were no pictures or videos of jurors. But when the trooper asked to see her recently deleted photos and videos, she saw a video of people walking out of the building. A court officer identified the people as the jurors in the high-profile case. Light claimed she didn't know she had filmed the jurors, the report said. I really didn't see a sign that said employees only, Light reportedly told the trooper. It wouldn't have stopped me. At her arraignment on Wednesday, Light's attorney Jennifer White described her client's actions as an innocent attempt to shoot a photograph of the defendant, not jurors. This is a complete misunderstanding, Your Honor, White said, according to media reports. My client was seeking a picture of Miss Clancy and had no interaction with the jurors. Light was released on her own recognizance. She is facing charges of aggravated intimidation of a witness, juror, police, court official. Though the police report calls it a misdemeanor, state law describes the charge as a serious felony. There has been intense heightened security at the courthouse and the parking lot since the sensational murder trial has been underway. It's like a bad nightmare. Restaurateur Kesang Gale grieves loved ones and friends lost in the Nepal flood disaster as Plymouth rallies around him and his family. By Mark Pothier. The first shards of morning light had not appeared when the call came a week ago. Kesang Gale and his wife, Deshen, were still sleeping. A cousin was on the line from the Rusawa region of Nepal, where Gale was born and raised before coming to Plymouth in 1999. My wife woke me saying, get up, said Gale, known to most as KG, owner of the Himalaya Lobster Hut and Momo Hut restaurants in Plymouth. In the darkness, slivers of information unveiled a horror impossible to comprehend. She said, everybody's dead, he recalled. The villages are gone. Deshen was born in Gattakola, about a 10-minute drive from Temur, Gale's home. Both gone? How could this be, they wondered. Before long, videos posted online showed an immense wall of muddy water roaring through narrow mountain settlements, obliterating everything in its path. The scenes were so dramatic, many people initially thought they were AI-generated. Since then, each dawn has brought more details about the tragedy and its aftermath. Scientists believe a massive landslide and a glacier collapse, perhaps triggered by warming temperatures, took place about 3 miles high on Langtang Larang, a mountain in the Himalayas close to Nepal's border with Tibet. Water, debris, and rock hurtled down the Trishulai River through villages etched into narrow valleys. The wall of the devastation traveled for miles, becoming more potent as the torrent gained momentum. For those in its path, there was little or no warning. My cousin said, his wife, and his older sister were talking in their house, and then they felt like an earthquake, Gale said Monday. They ran outside to look down and then saw a river coming, washing away all the houses. They ran downstairs, and then they ran up the hill. He and his wife survived. The older sister could not run fast enough. She couldn't beat the water. As of Tuesday, more than 1,000 people were confirmed dead. About 4,400 remain missing, and at least 10,000 have been rescued. The number of homes and other buildings destroyed has yet to be calculated. Settlements dating to 1,000 years or more have been erased. Gale said he hasn't been able to tally the number of immediate and extended family members who were killed, but it includes his brother, Nurbu Gale, and his sister-in-law, Dolma Yangchen. They were visiting the region at the time of the flood and arrived the night before. I came up with about 25 names, he said, but there's so many more that I couldn't think of. If I have to estimate, maybe 70, 80, close to 100 people I know or was related to died. A cousin, another far cousin, a husband and wife, mother and daughter, who just came from India after she graduated college, just spending time with the family. All four of them gone. And another guy I know and his sister, gone. Another wife and a husband in their 40s, they're gone. Basically, some families are gone. Almost as soon as the news became known in Plymouth, people began rallying to help the Gales, known for their generosity, raise money for survivors. The family started a GoFundMe page that by Tuesday evening had generated more than $38,000. Donations have ranged from $5 to $5,000. The money will be used to provide direct assistance to families and individuals affected by this disaster, particularly in Rasuwa, according to a description on the page. The small villages of Tamur in Gadakola in Rasuwa are our home, the family wrote. They are places where our parents were born and raised and where generations of our family have lived, built homes, created memories, and raised their families. At Plymouth Fitness, where several Gales are members, the GoFundMe campaign is being publicized, said General Manager Paul Baldrate. The club also plans to make a substantial donation to the cause, he said. We had a staff member go through a difficult time in the past, and the Gale family was just phenomenal, Baldrate said. They're just that kind of people. Jim Doyle, who manages the Himalaya for the Gales, said the family is donating 50% of its sales from Monday through this coming Sunday to aiding the rebuilding effort in Nepal. Squinny's Pizza is also setting aside an unspecified amount of money from a promotion. Pompey Delafield, president of the Rotary Club of Plymouth, said it is organizing a drive to aid the Betrawadi Bazaar area in the Udagara region of the country. Delafield, who has lived in Nepal and said more details will be forthcoming when we get closer to identifying an appropriate way to get the money to the desired population. Meantime, daily life for the Gale remains a foggy struggle. He leans heavily on his Buddhist faith for a semblance of stability, but even those deep-rooted beliefs are not a buffer for human pain. In this moment, more than 7,000 miles removed from his place of origin, Gale cannot rationalize the enormity of what has taken place. My mind is kind of like mush, he said. I just obviously feel like, what can I do? I mean, there's nothing I can do, and I don't even know where to start. I have no motivation of life. It feels like I am dead inside, you know? Deshen, he said, also is not doing well, but she's hanging in there. She's the one that tells me you've got to be strong. It's like a bad nightmare, he said. I was confused 100% for the first few days, and I am still confused as hell. Well-known vet facing criminal charges. Popular local veterinarian charged with indecent assault in 2024 is back in jail on charges he was smoking crack in his car outside of the Lindsay Clancy trial. By Andrea Estes. A longtime Plymouth veterinarian already facing abuse charges from an employee at his practice was arrested again last week on unrelated drug charges. Arthur Rick Newman, 77, described on social media as a legend in Plymouth for his love and dedication to treating family pets, was found in his car with a crack pipe on August 26, police records show. It is the latest chapter in a 2-year-long spiral for the well-known doctor who was provided affordable veterinary care in Plymouth since 1974. He has pleaded not guilty to all the charges, and authorities have held hearings to determine his mental competency to stand trial. His most recent trouble with the law came when a Massachusetts state trooper spotted him driving unusually slow on Thursday in the parking lot of the Plymouth County Courthouse during the high-profile murder trial of Lindsay Clancy. By the time Trooper Cass Wayne Samuels approached Newman's 2016 Honda Odyssey, it was parked in a handicapped space with the headlights on, according to the report. The trooper found Newman smoking crack cocaine from a glass pipe in an assortment of drugs, including vials, bottles, and approximately 400 Xanax and gabapentin pills in the car, the report says. In a police photo, some of the pills appear to be drugs for dogs. Newman told the trooper he was a veterinarian licensed to possess the drugs, the trooper said. But his license to dispense drugs had expired in 2025, the trooper reported. He was arrested on drug charges and driving an unregistered and uninsured vehicle at his arraignment the next day. Plymouth District Court Judge Shelby Smith revoked his bail on two pending criminal cases. Those cases began in 2024 when a former employee in Newman's veterinary practice accused him in a pattern of sexual harassment and unwanted touching. The woman went to police in November of 2024 and accused him of groping, kissing, and forcing her to touch him in a sexual way since the summer of 2023. Contacted by The Independent, Newman's attorney, Kristen Condon, declined to comment. However, in one police report, she hinted her client and his alleged victim had been romantically involved. In a Facebook post last month, Newman offered his own defense. "The truth won't actually set you free," the August 7th post reads. "Not if a narcissist got to tell their lie first. They don't just tell the story, they engineer a narrative," the post read. "They will weaponize your worst moments, completely erase their own, and sprinkle in just enough truth to make the lies flawless. By the time you even realize you need to defend yourself, they've already convinced everyone else they're the victim. In their version of history, your reaction is the only crime. The charges against him are graphic and disturbing. He allegedly repeatedly groped, kissed, and forced the former employee to touch him over his pants between July 23rd and November 4th of 24. It continued, she said, until she finally quit her job in late 2024. He sent her links to photos of women with large breasts and made inappropriate comments about her body in videos and screenshots, she alleged. He also commented on a TikTok showing her playing with a husky, suggesting she was having sex with the dog, she said. The married doctor texted her night and day and monitored her movements online and in real life, she told police. He was charged with indecent assault and battery and criminal harassment on December 18th of 2024, and Newman was ordered not to contact her in any way. On February 19th of 2026, she reported receiving an email she believed to be from Newman, which linked to a fake porn site in a very inappropriate picture. In that case, Plymouth Patrol Officer Callahan Gibbs questioned Newman at his home on February 21st. The doctor admitted he sent the email, but said he meant to send it to his lawyer only, Gibbs wrote. He was arrested again, this time for violating the harassment prevention order. While at Newman's house, Gibbs discovered pills for which Newman did not have prescriptions, the officer reported, and the vet was also charged with illegal drug possession. While being booked at the police station on February 20th, 2026, Newman felt ill and was taken to Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital, Plymouth, where he was admitted, according to court records. A review of the state's licensing records show Newman still has an active veterinarian license. Until recently, he reported a pop-up veterinarian practice called Vet Pet Pals, which is now listed online as closed. He appears to have been a beloved community doctor. "Coming to my house to do all my dogs today," said one client in a Facebook post. "I don't know any other vet who would do this. He's the best." Current records show Newman was scheduled to be examined July 9th to determine if he was competent to stand trial in the decency case. The records do not show any test results. Newman is being held without bail at the Plymouth County Correctional Facility and is due back in court on September 17th. local primary races uncontested. Tuesday's primary will decide the Republican candidates for governor and county commission and some congressional Democratic candidates, by Fred Thies. Unlike hotly contested primaries 2 years ago, most races for seats in the state Senate and House to represent Plymouth on Beacon Hill are uncontested in Tuesday's primary election. The incumbent Dylan Fernandez D. Falmouth is running unopposed in the Democratic primary for state Senate, while Bourne School Committee member Carrie McRae has no opponents on the ballot in the Republican primary. The same situation holds in Plymouth's race for its 2 seats in the state House of Representatives. In the first Plymouth district, which encompasses most of the town, Democratic incumbent Michelle Badger is running unopposed. In the Republican primary, Select Board member David Golden has no opponents on the ballot. In the 12th Plymouth District, which includes downtown North Plymouth and parts of West Plymouth, Democratic incumbent Kathleen Lenatra is running unopposed. In the Republican primary, Lobsterman Eric Machino, his party's nominee 2 years ago, has no opponents on the ballot. Voters do have choices in some other primary races. In what is perhaps the most watched primary election, the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate, Congressman Seth Moulton is challenging incumbent Ed Markey. In the Republican primary, Attorney John Deaton is running unopposed. Governor Maura Healey has no opponents on the Democratic primary ballot in her bid for re-election. The contest is in the Republican primary, where former medical device technology company CEO Michael Minone faces former MBTA acting manager Brian Shortsleeve. Democratic Congressman Bill Keating has a challenger in his bid for re-election in the 9th Congressional District, former tavern and restaurant general manager Craig Swallow. In the primary, Republican primary, charter fishing boat captain Tyler McAllister is running unopposed. Republicans did not field a candidate for Secretary of State, Auditor, Governor's Council, Register of Probate, or County Treasurer. Unenrolled voters can vote in either the Republican or Democratic primary. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., and voters can find out where to vote and see a sample ballot here.